Liz Merrill, the NFL draft is next week, and it looks like the Chicago Bears are set to take USC's Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick. But you're here today to explain how this isn't always such a cut and dry result, right? What's on the table here, Liz?
This is the 20th anniversary of the 2004 draft, when Eli Manning bucked the system and said, yes, I'm the number one, presumptive number one pick, and it sure looks like the San Diego Chargers are going to pick me. But I don't want to go to San Diego.
And Eli Manning expected to be the number one pick in this draft. However, Eli Manning, word out, please, San Diego with the first pick, don't draft me. Maybe the New York Giants are a better fit.
It was supposed to be discreet. Archie Manning had hoped and Eli had hoped it wouldn't get leaked. And of course it did. And then it sort of became a media feeding frenzy.
Archie, as we know, met with the Chargers and reiterated the family position. We do not want Eli to be a Charger. Why? The Mannings have not detailed these issues, the whys, but clearly it is an indictment of the Spanos family that owns the Chargers. They don't see much hope. They don't see a commitment.
Why was this so important to you?
That had only happened twice before in the last four decades. It happened in the 1980s with John Elway and Bo Jackson. Both of them said that they didn't want to go to their prospective teams.
Baltimore selects as the first choice in the draft quarterback John Elway of Stanford.
We had been in discussions with him 2 and 3 months before the draft that I was not going to play in Baltimore, that if that came to it, I was going to play baseball for the Yankees, and I was fortunate to have an option.
Bo Jackson, as we know, was this incredible athlete who could be one of the top players, if not the top player in either sport.
The Buccaneers select first choice on the first round. Running back from Auburn, Bo Jackson.
The major reason Jackson chose baseball is that everybody expected him to pick football.
I proved all of you wrong. And now all of you are sitting here saying, this guy, he's done just the opposite. I'm going to always do the opposite.
It also was important because there were some grumblings about the presumptive number one pick in this year's draft that maybe he didn't want to go to his suggested city.
Grumblings about Caleb Williams, who's widely expected to be the first pick of the 2024 draft, but to be clear, you're talking about him not accepting his fate if the Bears draft him?
Well, you never know. It's still TBD, but it sounds like he's going to the Bears for sure. But for a while, there was sort of some speculation swirling. As you know, every draft, there's always a few different inflection points of drama that happen every year. And some of it seems manufactured. Carl Williams raised a shadow of the doubt.
Kaylor of The Athletic. She's the one that asked a question to Ryan Poles yesterday about, you know, does he have any concerns about Caleb Williams wanting to play in Chicago? Ryan, of course, said no, not at all. The story on her end has a lot to do with Carl, the father. Carl wanted an ownership stake.
Yeah.
In the only interview he's done, he told GQ kind of about his disdain about the draft and how the best players wind up going to the worst teams. Now, that's not the case for Chicago this year because they finished close to 500, but you know they acquired that draft from a trade last year. But yes, so there's definitely been some ambiguity with this draft, at least over the winter.
Liz, as a sports fan and an agent of chaos, I so wish this were true. But Caleb himself hasn't even said that he doesn't want to be drafted by the Bears. So this kind of feels like a scenario where the best prospects are just accepting their fates in this situation, correct?
It's interesting that you can be the best player in college football and you don't have any say about where you go. And it's been like that forever. And the CBA has sort of changed that even a little bit more. You know, John Elway's agent, Marvin Demoff, told the Elways when he was pitching this, hey, let's buck the draft. You know, he said, when I got my law degree, I wasn't told that I had to go to Des Moines to work. I picked where I worked. And it's never been that way for the NFL or any other sport, really. And I'm not sure why more players don't take that route. You're talking about the best athlete in his prospective sport, yet he has very little power or control over what happens to him. He has to go where a team dictates. And three of those guys buck the system, but a presumptive number one hasn't publicly stated since that he did not want to go to a team. And we've never had sort of this chaos again on draft day.
The NFL draft is next week, and as it has always been, the number one pick will be making all the headlines. But what happens when those headlines are about that player not wanting to go to the team that picks them? It has only happened a few times in league history, and while this year's presumptive number one pick, Caleb Williams, likely won't be one of them, NIL now gives players enough leverage to make you wonder if it could happen again. So today, Liz Merrill tells us the story of those players who bucked the system and why you never know what's going to happen on draft day. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Thursday, April 18th. This is ESPN Daily. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Liz, let's talk about those two players from the 80s, John Elway and Bo Jackson. Why were they able to put themselves in such a unique situation with leverage?
Well, Bo Jackson, as we know, was this incredible athlete, climbed baseball walls in the outfield to catch balls.
Orsulak licks that one to left center field. Bo won the charge. Bo is there. Yo, mama, run that wall. Bo, get up that wall.
Bo knows exactly what he's doing.
Spider-Man.
Who could break a bat against his knee and make it look like a toothpick.
And the 0-2. And Jackson, that is, strikes out.
He just snapped
his bat. Looks like a twig, doesn't it? Looks like a kind of a twig you find in the woods.
He was also very good in football. Good enough that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wanted to pick him number one.
Of course, that story ends with Bo Jackson actually spurning the Bucs in the NFL and going to the big leagues, the Kansas City Royals. Then he re-entered the draft and was selected by the then Los Angeles Raiders, and the rest is history. Ultimately, becoming the most famous two-sport athlete this country has ever seen. Bo knows. But the John Elway scenario, Liz, I would wager that many fans out there today don't even know Elway wasn't drafted by the Broncos in 1983. How did that play out?
So, John Elway was the presumptive number one at quarterback coming out of Stanford.
Elway has been called, Chris, the best college quarterback to come out of the college ranks since Namath. Dick Steinberg has said he's got no flaws. We talked about him on our draft preview show. We'll take a look at his scouting report in just a bit. And the only thing he gets knocked down on is agility, but his arm is as good as we've ever seen.
The Baltimore Colts wanted him. They had the number one pick. But what was going on behind the scenes there was that the Colts were a mess. They had an owner who was meddlesome, who made a lot of news for verbally abusing players. And Elway was selected by the New York Yankees in the second round of the 1981 Major League Draft. Yankees owner George Steinbrenner pledged to make him a starting right fielder by 1985. As the 1983 NFL Draft approached, the Elways weren't pleased with the idea of playing for the Baltimore Colts.
Who came up with the plan to refuse to play for the Colts. Was that Elway himself?
No, it was his agent, Marvin Demoff. John and Jack Elway sat down with Demoff, and he basically brought this pitch to him. He told them, hey, you don't have to play for the Colts. And they were sort of dumbfounded. And he told them that their situation was sort of made for having a choice. But the thing that provided that was baseball. Then they sort of implemented the plan. And using the Yankees and that draft pick as leverage to not go to Baltimore.
The infamous Mayflower trucks scene is something that is burned into the brains of humans from Baltimore and will be forever. But between Irsay and Elway, the draft and move has spawned multiple 30 for 30s, by the way. Like, yes. That was a huge moment in American sports history, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. Iconic. And the piece that people maybe forget, though, is that John Elway almost played for that team that, you know, was relocated less than a year later.
But instead, he was traded to the Denver Broncos and is remembered as basically one of the greatest QBs in NFL history. When it comes to Eli Manning, though, he definitely wasn't going to be playing Major League Baseball. So how did he manage to insert his leverage?
So his leverage came from bloodlines. His dad, Archie, was a successful NFL quarterback, albeit on a losing team for much of his career with the New Orleans Saints. His brother, his older brother, is Peyton Manning, who by that time had well established himself as one of the NFL's elite quarterbacks. Now, sort of the word back then was that Archie had expressed sort of some sadness that he was picked by a team that, you know, performed so poorly and that kind of set the trajectory of his career.
Archie, 1998, Peyton, number one pick to the Colts. The year before, they were 3-13. Why is this different?
Well, all teams are different. It was kind of a start over there, and people that were there, a lot of people that they had. There's so many, as I said, we weren't going to talk about all these issues and all these factors. There were a lot of them presented to Eli, and he made this decision. But every organization is different, Susan.
Now, Archie has since told me that's not the case as far as, you know, any of this shaping into Eli's thoughts. But you've got a family that's very revered in the NFL. And now you've got the younger brother who is the best quarterback, which, by the way, 2004, the other thing that stands out about it, it was a very talent-rich quarterback class. And so you've got Eli, he's 1A, supposedly. And then 1B are Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger. And all eyes are on him to see what's going to happen after they take the stand that they did not want to make public.
If the Chargers call your name when I talk to you after the pick, will you be wearing a Chargers hat?
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Good luck, guys. Thanks.
So what ultimately made the Bolts actually trade Manning?
I tried to contact AJ Smith, the general manager for the Chargers at that time, and he was unavailable for comment. But obviously, do you want a quarterback to be who's really the face of your franchise, especially when it's somebody like Eli Manning? Do you want that guy to not be there? Do the fans want someone who doesn't want to be there? So that's a big part of it. He's the leader of your team. How are you going to get a locker room to get behind you when you've publicly said you don't want to be there? And then there's also the standpoint of, what if he actually doesn't play? What if he takes this stand and he's, you know, we can draft him and he's going to not join the team? Now, who knows if that was going to happen? He did hold up the jersey. And if you watch the ESPN broadcast, the 8-hour YouTube broadcast of that, it's like Chris Berman says, that's a classy move that he holds up the jersey, but he didn't put on the hat.
With the first choice in the 2004 NFL draft, the San Diego Chargers select Eli Manning, quarterback, Mississippi.
Here's the thing about this, is in speaking with Archie this week.
Wait a minute, hold on, Mort. Classy yes. Move, he's holding up a Charger jersey. Let's notice that.
Visiting with Archie this week, he
But you know, what do you do in that situation? There's when there's a decent chance that everything is going to blow up in your face. You try to get as much draft capital as you possibly can. And the beauty of it is you've got two other pretty good quarterbacks, two great quarterbacks that are your fallbacks.
This was such an interesting moment. I was in college at the time. I went to Miami of Ohio. I covered Benjamin Todd Roethlisberger a lot. I knew him. I wrote a column in the paper at school then that this attitude of Eli's, who felt like the kind of guy that just kind of slumped his shoulders and walked off the field after throwing touchdown passes, it was in stark contrast to the type of guy that was going to say, I'm not playing there. I remember this being a very weird kind of situation overall for somebody who was so obviously a good player. Point being, what were the long-term impacts of what Manning and his camp chose to do?
You're right, though, about Eli. He seems like just the opposite of someone who would take a stand. He seems easygoing, mellow. That's what made it so interesting. And then you've got, he looks so incredibly young. It looks like a kid. You know, if you look at the video, you forget about how young he looked. And all the cameras are panned on him, but I think that played to his really calm nature played to that whole moment. He wasn't going to get all emotional about it. I mean, you could tell he was very uncomfortable, but so what happened was, I mean, basically the trajectory of three franchises were sort of set in motion by this young guy's desire not to go to San Diego. The Giants had the number 4 pick. They were going to pick Ben Roethlisberger. Ernie Accorsi, I talked to him, the former general manager with the Giants. He really liked Roethlisberger. And when the Chargers said they were going to call them, to call the Giants, like right the day before the draft, and they never did, he was like, whatever, I'm not calling that guy. I'm going to play it cool because worst comes to worst, we get Ben Roethlisberger, who they really liked also. I would say the person who probably it took the toll on the most was Roethlisberger, though, because you're going through these highs and lows of emotions and they keep panning to him with his agent, Lee Steinberg. And they're both like, oh, man, what's going to if you, you know, it's really to watch it play out. It makes for some pretty good television just because then Roethlisberger's got to wait till 11.
Well, guys, Ben Roethlisberger has never had it easy. In fact, in high school, his high school coach's son was the quarterback, and he had to wait to play to a senior year. So Ben Roethlisberger is used to waiting. Congratulations from his family. Obviously, good news. Ben, are you a Steeler?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's interesting how the domino effect of all of those of that one guy stand and the moves that followed. It goes to show you in some ways that there is some player empowerment because he took the stance and it affected him well. I mean, everything worked out, but yeah, it's really interesting how his stance affected all those guys.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how NIL has completely changed everything on draft day. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Liz, there was one point in your story that stood out to me more so than any of them, which was in 2021, before NIL launched, 130 underclassmen declared for the NFL draft. And this year, that number is 58. That is less than half. That was an eye-popping statistic to me.
Yeah, it's a testament to NIL and sort of some of the possibilities that are out there now. And we're not just talking about high-end draft picks. You know, you're not seeing as many people who are sort of on the fringe going, because in some cases they can make money that rivals what they would make in the NFL. Now, you could put that on the other side, though, and say, especially for like the top picks, you have to get your clock started in order to get to that next contract. And every year you wait, you're delaying that and you're getting older. But that clearly, you know, I talked to some marketing people and agents, and they believe, I mean, look at the dramatic difference that NIL does have a big part of that.
The big fish we're talking about here is obviously Caleb Williams. I live in Los Angeles, but I am from DC, so I have known about this kid for quite a long time. I've seen him play again. His dad, great dude, nice guy. But there is this impression that there's some sort of potential idea that he might not want to play somewhere, particularly Chicago, who has the number one pick. Where did any of these whispers or rumors or whatever we're going to call them start?
It all started last fall in September. Carl Williams told GQ that being the number one pick is both the gift and the curse, because the best player often winds up on the worst team. He told GQ that you're almost better not being drafted than being drafted first, and that the system is completely backwards. Now, that might be the case, because obviously if you're at undrafted free agent, you can dictate where you go. But here's the difference in his scenario, in Caleb Williams' scenario. He's got money now, because as The Athletic reported, he's made about $10 million in NIL and endorsements. Now, I talked to a marketing person who didn't want to go on the record on this, but he thinks he's made significantly more than that when you count trading card deals. So, I mean, that's a lot of money to be in your pockets that can sustain you for a good while. Now, it's compared to what he's going to make as a number one pick with endorsements, especially if he's in a place like Chicago. Obviously, that's going to go up, but he is in a unique situation. On the flip side of that, Carl Williams, I mean, nobody is ever going to look out for the athlete as much as the parents are. And he has his thoughts on the way he thinks the system is run, and he was probably trying to find loopholes. I guess we do know the stance, because Caleb told Pete Thamel during the combine that, you know, he'd be excited if he went to Chicago. So it sure seems like everything is pointing in that direction.
This is fascinating to me, because to combine all of the things that you said, Elway, Bo Jackson, they've got an actual thing, baseball, on the other side. Eli Manning has whatever we'll just call blue blood status on the other side. To just sort of have money and just say, guess what, I just might not play for your team is a very different kind of thing. How do you think this would actually go if he said, I don't actually want to play in Chicago?
Well, if a player did not want to go, it could happen just like it's happened with Eli, in that the team that holds the number one pick could trade that and get, you know, possibly at least another number one pick and build up some draft collateral. A player who enters the draft has X amount of time to go back to school. Caleb is past that standpoint. You can say that he can just not play this year, but it seems sort of unfathomable that somebody would do that. We don't have a big test sample. This hasn't happened a lot, and we're speaking completely hypothetically here, because Caleb Williams has said, hey, if the Bears pick me, I'm going to be excited.
One place we're not speaking hypothetically about is Boulder, Colorado. I spent a lot of time there this fall. Matter of fact, saw Caleb Williams play there. But Deion Sanders went on a podcast and basically said, my two guys, I'm picking where they go.
Where do you predict Shedeur and Travis going in the draft?
Top four.
Ooh, that's pretty beautiful.
Anywhere from one through four. Now, all this is subjective because I know where I want them to go. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget Shallow, okay? Mm-hmm. But I know where I want them to go. So there's certain cities that ain't gonna happen.
Okay, you on point.
It's gonna be an Eli.
That kind of shocked me because I didn't necessarily see them as the kind of players that would do this, but how has that affected things just in terms of people opening their minds to the ideas of big time guys now just making their own decisions?
Well, that's another extenuating circumstance, right? I mean, it's Deion, so he can pretty much say whatever he wants. His dad has obviously made a lot of money in the NFL. He also comes from a football family. There is more sway there. That's going to hold. I don't know what Shedeur Sanders will be in next year's draft, but it sounds like, you know, he'll probably be up there depending on the season he has. I tried to get a hold of both Deion and Shedeur, and I was told that neither one of them could comment for this story, but evidently Deion's said some things otherwise. But it's a unique situation once again. You know, his dad has a lot of power, and by that token, so does Shedeur. I mean, he has options, I would think.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.